Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by the Orthodox Union's Israel Center in Jerusalem. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and you are listening to the show for Parshat Chukat. Just for your information, Torah Tidbits Audio has been around for a little over 7 years. It originally was a radio broadcast on Arut Sheva. When Arut Sheva went off the air and onto internet only, Torah Tidbits Audio was part, and still is, of IsraelNationalRadio.com. And we have recently joined the family of OU Radio, or Radio U, and we are very pleased to be part of that family. It might even be said that Torah Tidbits Audio was Radio U even before there was a Radio U. I don't know if you're all aware of this, but there are two websites that both get to the same place, www.ouradio.org, OU Radio, which can also be looked at as Our Radio, OURADIO, as well as www.raidou. Remember, there's only one R in OU Radio, and there's only one O in Radio U. So if you spell them wrong, you're not going to get to this website, but you have your choice, whichever one appeals to you more. In case you would like to make any requests for music for this show, send in a comment or whatever, you can write to me at tt@ou.org. That's the regular Torah Tidbits email address. The mail comes to me, and it wouldn't be a bad idea to put into the subject line TTA or something like that. Just another comment about pronunciation to forestall some people writing in. The word properly pronounced is chukat. When we read the Torah, we say zot chukat haTorah. When you're talking English, this is my feeling, and you use Hebrew words, the Hebrew is often translated into what's known as yeshivish. It's a different language. So Hebrew is chukat. English is either chukat or chukas. And both of those are alternate pronunciations in yeshivish. I am a little facetious now, a little tongue-in-cheek, but there is a seriousness to it as well. Random House Dictionary I've mentioned in the past. I was very surprised to see in many of the Hebrew words that have become English words, like menorah, M-E-N-O-R-A-H, Random House shows pronunciation. The English pronunciation of menorah is menorah. The Hebrew pronunciation, they indicate in parentheses, is menorah. So they call it English, I call it yeshivish, but yeshivish in my definition is the English way to pronounce many of the Hebrew words that creep into an English speaker's speech. Got the picture? Anyway, the show is for Parshat Chukat. If you're listening to the first broadcast, it is Yom Chamishi, B'Shabbat Parshat Chukat. It is Thursday on the secular calendar, July 7th. And of course, in our calendar, it is the first day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, which is also the 30th day of the month of Sivan, 5765, Tavshin Samachay. Now you know when. And if you happen to be listening to it a day or two later, you can figure out when you're listening to it. But let's get down to business. Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihiena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mi ya'amod. ki imacha haslicha lema'an tivare. Ki viti adonai ki vata nafshi velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi ladonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el adonai ki im adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzarao v'ashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha ha'makom yirachem aleihem ויוציאים מצרה לרווחה, ומאפלה לאורה, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. I'd like to play a track from an album called Ayelet HaShachar. The particular track is Or Chadash. It's from the Shacharit Davening, the end of the first bracha before Kriyat Shema. But it dawned on me as I was listening to it, and I actually have two different tracks with the same words, different flavor, melody. This is one of them, and maybe we'll play the other one later in the show. Or Chadash al Tzion Ta'ir. Let a new light shine on Zion. We're asking this of God. V'nizke kulanu mehera la'oro. And may we all quickly merit that light. It's talking, I don't know how detailed I want to say this, but let me just put it that Zion, at this moment, with what's going on, can use a new light from God, and may we soon, speedily merit that new light. As I say quite often on this show, the songs, practically all of them, that I choose to play are not just songs for entertainment. They are very often prayers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's true, each of us is supposed to say that each morning, weekday, as well as Shabbat, but it doesn't hurt to say it again right now and to sing it right now and to listen to the song and feel the prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Parshat Chukat is the smallest sedra of the book of Bamidbar. It's not the smallest of the Torah, and its size really is not relevant to what I want to say. What's very interesting about Chukat is that it begins at the beginning of the sojourn in the wilderness. the beginning of the 40-year period. We just had Korach, which took place early on, preceded by Shlach with the sin of the spies in 1 year out of Egypt. Everything that happened before that was during the first year following the Exodus. And the beginning of Chukat deals with Para Aduma. Let's say, as many commentaries do, that the command about Para Aduma took place early on as well. And right after that, we have Miriam's death, which is at the end of the 40-year period. A significant piece of time has gone by in the blink of an eye. One moment, Bnei Yisrael were fresh out of Egypt with the things that occurred at the beginning, and boom, let's say halfway through the second Aliyah, we're already in Midbar Tzin, in month of Nisan, but all the way at the end of the 40 years. What happened in all of those middle years? Let's say 38 of them. Where'd they go? What'd we do? What did the people do? Nothing, or almost nothing, of significance to tell us occurred during that time, except that tradition tells us the people went day by day, basically learning Torah and reviewing it with each other. And we know that. That's our tradition. What happened each of those days or each of those years, even exactly where they were, come up to Parshat Maaseh, we have a summary of the travels and the names of the places we went to. We do not have, in almost any of them, we do not have how long we stayed in a particular place and anything that happened in that place. I'm basically saying it just so that you should be aware of what happens in Parshat Chukat. At the end of Chukat, we arrive in Arvot Moav, the threshold of Eretz Yisrael. That's the end of the traveling. We'll get the summary in Maaseh, but following Chukat, you have Balak and Pinchas and Matot and Maaseh and the entire book of Devarim, where we are located in the plains of Moav, Arvot Moav. Things happen there, but we don't go anyplace else. Next travel is to cross the Jordan into Eretz Yisrael, but a lot will happen until then, and we see it by four sedras of Bamidbar and the whole book of Devarim. I think it's an interesting thing to keep in mind, just so that our minds can mull it over. Okay, back to the beginning of Chukat. God speaks to Moshe and Aaron, and he says to them, Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is the quintessential chok of the Torah that God commanded, saying, speak to the people of Israel, V'yikhu Elecha Fara Adumat Mima, you shall take unto you a reddish cow, Asher Ein Ba Mum, unblemished, Asher Lo Ala Aleha Ol, one that a yoke had never been placed upon. Various procedures are followed. The cow is slaughtered and then burnt together with other items that are put into the fire. The ashes are collected. This is not done in the Beit HaMikdash, but on the Mount of Olives facing Har HaBayit, to the Temple Mount, and the ashes of this fire are then mixed with Mayim Chayim, water from a live spring. Other ingredients are put in to produce a potion which is used to purify an individual who has become Temei Met. Our tradition tells us that King Solomon, the wisest of people, said, I grasp everything that there is in the Torah. The one thing that eludes my understanding is the whole issue of Parah Aduma. Let's take a look at an interesting two-sided presentation in Rashi. Rashi, major commentary of the Torah, says, without attempting to explain Parah Aduma, he says, what's the idea behind a chok? When the nations of the world will ridicule the Jewish people and say, what are you doing that silly mitzvah for? What does it mean? A red cow, burning it, ashes, tamei, tahor, makes this guy ritually defiled and this one purified. Doesn't make any sense. We proudly say, we don't do mitzvot because they make sense. We do them because they are commands of God. I will add that there are many mitzvot that do make sense to us. And we consider, or should consider, the logic, the common sense, the rationale of a mitzvah that we can grasp to be a bonus, a fringe benefit. Not only is this a command of God, but your mind doesn't have to belabor the issue of why you're doing it. You can see a dimension of the mitzvah that makes perfect sense to you. I would also have to point out now that even the most logical common sense mitzvah has an element of chok, because at some point the logic breaks down. Let's take honoring parents. What can be more common sense and logical than honoring parents? Well, what if a parent is abusive? Does the child still have to follow that mitzvah to honor and revere his parents? Illogically, the answer is yes, he does. How you cope with such a situation, an unfortunate situation like that, we're not going to discuss now. But at a certain point, logic breaks down. That's where the element of chok comes to the rescue. And it is not just an answer to the nations of the world who scoff at us. It is an answer to our fellow Jews who also scoff. Oh, that's an old-fashioned mitzvah. It doesn't apply today. It doesn't make any sense in the context of modern times. And we say, no, that is not true. Maybe I could figure out what it's doing in our time, and maybe I can't, but that's irrelevant to the fact that this is a gzeirat hakatuv, gzeirat hamelach, a decree of the king. And I follow that because I am a loyal subject of the king. This is a very important idea, not only as an answer to other nations, not only as an answer to fellow Jews who are not on that level of keeping mitzvot purely because they are God's command. They're an answer to each of us. We're part of our own mind and our own personality resists doing something that we are not completely comfortable with or convinced that there's a logic to. And I would say that the best of us have a little piece of ourselves that needs the reassurance that we perform mitzvot because God commanded them to us. You don't have to understand little black leather boxes with parchments in them that go on your arm and on your head, and straps that wind around your arm and come around your neck and go down your front. It's nice if you can study tefillin and understand tefillin and internalize the idea of the mitzvah. But a Jew has to also understand that if he doesn't achieve that level of understanding of mitzvot, it does not take away, or should not take away, from the observance of the mitzvah, from the value of the mitzvah. So that's Rashi's starting point. But then you continue in Rashi, and after presenting the details of this quintessential chok, Rashi says there's a Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan who treated the whole topic of Parah Aduma in a very beautiful way, and he then goes and shares it with us. Hold that thought, and let's have another track from Ayelet HaShachar, and then we'll get back to Parah Aduma.
Toshiyabani, toshiyabani. Bingla bingla lavot, toshiyabani, toshiyabani. Bingla bingla lavot, toshiyabani, toshiyabani. Bingla bingla lavot, toshiyabani, toshiyabani. Oyom tavi geula.
That was from the album Ayelet HaShachar. The song was Biglal Avot, because of the ancestors, Toshia Banim. May there be a salvation for the children, V'tavi Geula Livnei V'neihem, and God, please bring redemption, the Geula, the ultimate redemption, the complete redemption, to their grandchildren and descendants. If this show were being broadcast live, I would make it a phone-in question for a prize to tell me where these words come from, but since it's not, I'll tell you. There are two places. One is the Yom Liyabasha Nehepchu Mitzulim song at a Brit Milah. It is called Geula Levrit Milah. It's the very end, last verse of that song. In my experience, I haven't heard it at Britot that often, but once in a while, someone will start it up and a few people will join in. The other source is the piyut on Pesach called Brach Dodi, right before Gaal Yisrael, leading into the Amidah. Once upon a time, a long time ago, I remember davening in the shul that actually said those piyutim. It's been a long time since most shuls that I'm aware of have gotten anywhere near those kind of piyutim. Nonetheless, that's where it's from. This song then also is a prayer to God to remember the merit of our ancestors and to bring a geula to us. We were talking about Parshat Chukat, specifically Parah Aduma, in its aspect of being the quintessential chok, and what that means. And I just want to conclude that part by reiterating that every mitzvah essentially has an element of chok. Some mitzvot we could call pure chukim, and others are 10% chok, 50% chok. You get my point. there's always an element of choke, which is why there's an element of hesitation in anyone attempting to give reasons for mitzvot. Because we are supposed to do mitzvot, not because they're logical, not because they appeal to us, not because they're fun or beneficial, but because they are the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything else is a fringe benefit. On the other hand, Rashi, as I mentioned earlier, proceeds to explain, put the word in quotes, Para Aduma as an analogy to an atonement for the sin of the golden calf. The image of the red cow being the mother of the golden calf, being called to clean up the mess left by her son. And there's a lot to be said about that. I'm not going to now. The point is that when you go through that mashal, and when you explain other aspects of Para Aduma, even what is supposed to be the most enigmatic, that it is mitame tahorim, it defiles those that are ritually pure, and it is mitaher tameim, it purifies the ritually impure, which of course is its main function. But even that has very well explained logic to it. And just to give you one example, the image of a person having fallen into a deep hole in the dirt, and he tries to climb out, but the walls are perfectly vertical and too slippery, and he can't find any footholds, and he's stuck in the bottom of the hole, and he calls for help, and somebody comes along to help him. Now, the guy that comes along to help him is wearing a brand new white suit, and he's a little reluctant, let's say, to get down on his all fours and reach into the hole and help this guy out, but that's what he's going to do if he's a decent fellow. So he's going to come away from this experience dirty, and he's going to have to send his white suit to the cleaners, and he's going to have to take a shower. But certainly, when you compare that level of becoming dirty to the help that you gave the person stuck in the hole, there's no contest. So if the people who prepare the potion of the Para Aduma have to start out ritually pure, and by their function in preparing this special potion for purifying, they become Tameh, I don't know if I have a problem with that. But that's not even the point. The point is that Rashi does both. He speaks of it and waves it as a flag of the quintessential chok, and at the same time paints a very beautiful picture of its function for Jewish ritual throughout all times, with of course a hiatus between Para and Para. I'd like to go back now to the Ayelet HaShachar album that we have played so far, two tracks thereof, and play a third one. This is also to the words Or Chadash Al Tzion Ta'ir, may you, God, shine a new light on Zion. And this is a totally different kind of melody to it. But again, I want those words to be a prayer. And I think those of us who are familiar somewhat with what's going on in Zion now can really put our heart into asking God for a new light to shine.
Chadasha leZion Ta'ir, Al Tzion Ta'ir. Nizkechu lanu yachad, Mehera le'orot. Or chadasha leZion Ta'ir, Al Tzion Ta'ir. Nizkechu lanu yachad, Mehera le'orot. Ya hachan, imhei ale oro. בבקשה, על ציון תאיר, על ציון תאיר. ונזכחו כולנו יחד, מהרה לאור. אור חדשה, על ציון תאיר, על ציון תאיר. ונזכחו כולנו יחד, במהרה לאור.
You know, listening to that song a second time made me think of that piece of the davening. We're talking about Shacharit at the morning service, the first of the two brachot before Shema, the one that begins with talking about God as the creator of light and dark, Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech, the one who created both light and dark, and there you get the sense that we're talking about creation of Bereshit, the beginning. As we get to the very end of that bracha, the actual ending is Baruch Atah Hashem Yotzer HaMa'orot, the one who created the luminaries. But right before that, we put in this prayer for the Or Chadash Al Tzion Ta'ir, and that really, I would say, is a prayer for the Mashiach, the Messianic time, Melech HaMashiach, and a day where things will be seen in a new light, and you could have all kind of ways of explaining it, but you cover the whole gamut. There's more material in the middle we'll take a look at some other time, but these are some of the things that you think about when you pay attention to the words of a song sometimes. Just to continue with an overview of the Parsha, right after this first chapter on Para Aduma and ritual impurity and purity, we have the Torah's telling of the death of Miriam. She died in Midbar Tzin in the first month. Tradition tells us that it was on the 10th of Nisan that she died. And what we're talking about is exactly 1 year before we cross the Jordan River into Eretz Yisrael, which is also recorded as having happened on Yud Nisan. I would say that's somewhat significant, but the Yortzeit of Miriam HaNeviah is the 10th of Nisan in the next to the last year of the wandering. The Torah tells us that her death was accompanied by a lack of water, and sources tell us that it was the miraculous well that had given drink to the people most of the period of the wandering. That well was in the merit of Miriam, who had stayed by the water of the Nile to watch over baby Moshe. And when she died, the well disappeared, and the people became thirsty. What follows, then, is God's command to Aharon and Moshe to speak to the rock, and it will give water. Moshe instead raises his staff, which he was told to take, and strikes the rock twice, and abundant water comes out from it, and the people and their flocks are given to drink, are watered. God says to Moshe and Aharon, you showed lack of faith and thereby lost an opportunity to sanctify my name in the eyes of the people of Israel by only speaking to the rock and it would have given water. And therefore, and only therefore, you will not bring these people into the land which I am giving them. This little portion in the Torah has always created a lot of commentary and discussion. First, the harsh punishment of to Moshe and Aharon for what seems like a relatively mild offense. I mean, Moshe was told to take the staff, and he had a previous experience of striking a rock for water, and most commentaries will just say God judges very, very high-level spiritual people in a very strict manner, and that's about all we can say about that. And then there's the other element of cause and effect. I mean, why is the particular punishment for not having spoken to the rock and have missed an opportunity to make a Kiddush Hashem punished by not entering into Eretz Yisrael? Unfortunately, I have what I think is a better question than an answer, but I'm throwing it out on the table. The next portion tells us that Moshe sent messengers ahead to the king of Edom, the territory that went to the family of Esav, and the messengers approached with a message very conciliatory. Your brother Israel, you know what happened in Egypt and since then, and we ask for permission to pass through your land. We will stay on the main road. We won't go to the left or to the right. We'll pay for water, even though we can have a source of water on our own. But Edom refused, and God did not allow an encounter with Edom because he had promised that territory to Esav. Now, if Miriam died on the 10th of Nisan, we're talking about now Iyar Sivan Tammuz of almost 4 months later, call it 3.5 months later, the people travel and they come to the place called Hor Hahar, which is where Aharon passes away. But first there's a ceremonial exchange of the Kohen Gadol's garments from Aharon to his son Elazar. And that has always been held aloft as a very special thing. Aharon, full productive life. And the ultimate is to see his son follow in his footsteps, something that Moshe Rabbeinu looked on with maybe a twinge of envy, because that was not to be his fate. But the Torah records the passing of Aharon, which was on Rosh Chodesh Av. Interestingly, the Torah does not tell us here that it was Rosh Chodesh Av, but in Mas'ei, when it's recounting all of the travels, it mentions by date the Yortzeit of Aharon HaKohen. It is the only Yortzeit mentioned in the Torah. We have traditions about when other individuals died. The Torah tells us about other individuals dying, but only with Aharon is there a date associated with the death, and that is Rosh Chodesh Av. And in a couple of weeks, when it is Rosh Chodesh Av, we will be reading Parshat Maaseh Bo Bayom. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, as people used to say. Following the death of Aharon HaKohen, there's a brief portion where the Torah tells us that the Kena'ani Melech Arad, who was dwelling in the Negev, heard that Israel was coming, and they went out to do battle, and they actually took a hostage. Israel does battle against the Kena'ani. God puts the Kena'ani into their hands, and in fulfillment of their pledge to God, they do not take any spoils of war. Once again, the people seem to be depressed by all of the things that are happening, and they complain to God, to Moshe, about God and about Moshe. Why'd you take us out of Egypt to kill us here in the Midbar? All we're eating is this mun for years and years and years. God got angry at this and allowed the Nechashim Hasrafim, the poisonous snakes that probably were in the area anyway, but the people were protected from them, and allowed them to attack, and people from among the nation died. The people came to Moshe and they said, "We have sinned because we spoke against you and God. Please pray to God and take away this plague of snakes, serpents," and Moshe does that. God says to Moshe, "Make the image of a snake and put it on a staff, and those who have been bitten by the snakes will see this and live." This, of course, is a famous issue Are we talking about here a magic kind of thing? The Mishnah asks, what's going on here? Does a snake determine that a person lives or dies? No, it's God. But this became a symbol, a focal point that one was turning his eyes and his heart towards God in heaven, and that was what put an end to the outbreak. We'll continue our survey of Parshat Chukat after this next track, also from Ayelet HaShachar, this one the well-known Shabbat morning davening song, Kael Adon, to put us in the mood of the upcoming Shabbat or the recently passed Shabbat, depends when you're listening to the show.
עבוד על המרכבה זכות ומישור לפני חיסור חסד ברחמים מלך עבודו עובים מאורות שברא אלוקנו צרם בדעת מבינאו הסכם כוח וגבור הנתן בהם להיות מושלים בקרב תבל מלאים זיו ומפיעים נגנה עזיבה בכל העולם שמחים בצאתם וששים לבואם עושים באימה רצון קונם
We next come across the other Oz Yashir. This one, Oz Yashir Yisrael, Tashira Hazot, Ali Ve'er Enula, little song for the well. Without going into detail, just the fact that water plays such an amazing role in the life of human beings and in the course of the wandering in the wilderness. Episode after episode deals with water, physical water, good old H2O, but water means life and water means Torah, Ein Mayim Ella Torah, and therefore you can understand many of these passages on much more than one level. Following that, we have what looks like a similar encounter, this time with Sihon, the king of Emori, where we ask for permission to pass through their land. They too refuse like Edom, but unlike Edom, God did not tell us not to touch them. And when they came out to attack, we responded and vanquished them. Commentaries say this was an important thing to happen in the Midbar, because one of the major fears of crossing the Jordan would be the upcoming wars against the nations there, and this gives a little demonstration of what happens when you have God on your side. According to a traditional chronology, the battle against Sihon was in Elul of the year 2487, And the battle against Og, Melech HaBashan, was at the end of Tishrei in already 2488, the year which, approximately 6 months later, the people crossed the Jordan and entered Eretz Yisrael. So if you count 40 years from Nisan to Nisan to Nisan, in other words, not by the calendar according to creation, but going from Nisan to Nisan, then these events, meaning Miriam's death, Aharon's death, and these battles against Sichon and Og, took place in the 40th year, as other events do also. I want to say a couple of words about Kiddush Levana. People who listen and read Torah Tidbits know that it's one of my pet topics. But this particular month, we have an interesting situation. The Molad of Tammuz was Wednesday, that would be yesterday, 9:16 p.m. Israel Summer Time, which is, just to use one more example, 2:16 in the afternoon in New York, Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Now here is what that means. There's one opinion which is called Minhag Yerushalayim, the Shita of the Vilna Gaon, that you can begin saying Kiddush Levana 3 full days, that's 72 hours after the announced Molad. The announced Molad is given in times that are known as Jerusalem Solar Time, but they translate, as I just mentioned, into local time, which is the same moment, but expressed differently depending on where you are. So people in the eastern seaboard, with the Molad on Wednesday afternoon, if they follow the 3-day opinion, it brings them to Thursday, Friday, Shabbat afternoon, which means by Shabbat night, Motzoi Shabbat that is, right after Maariv, is time for Kiddush Levana. Here in Israel, we have a little bit of a problem. Right after Shabbos means 8:40-ish, 8:45, depending on when you finish davening, will still be a little short of the 3 full days from the Molad, and we won't be able to say Kiddush Levana right after davening. Shuls are not going to keep their people for another half an hour or more until 9:16. I'm also not too sure how visible the moon will be by 9:16, because it's set to set on Motzoi Shabbat in Israel at 10:02, which means at 9:16 it's fairly low on the horizon, and I don't know if it'll be visible. So probably Sunday will be a time for Kiddush Levana. Most people who are geared for Motzoi Shabbat will wait for the following Motzoi Shabbat, which will still be plenty of time before the deadline. With that said, I don't have much more time than to wish you a Shabbat Shalom and a Chodesh Tov. Remember that even though the end of Tammuz is during the Bein HaMitzarim period of mourning the Beit HaMikdash, but that part is less than half the month. Think positive, and may our sad days become happy days, and may we see the Or Chadash Al Tzion Ta'ir. You know what? How about one more track from the album we've been featuring in this show, Ayelet HaShachar, this song called Ufduye Hashem, Lehishtamea.
ישובון ובאו ציון ברינה ושמחת עולם ושמחת עולם ושמחת עולם על ראשם ששון ושמחה ששון ושמחה ישיגו ונה
ששון ושמחה ישיגו ונעשו היי ונעשו יגן במחה השם ישובון ובאו ציון מרינה ושמחת עולם ושמחת עולם ושמחת עולם על ראשם ששון ושמחה ששון ושמחה ישיגו ונעשו ונעשו יגון ונחה
You'll be in extreme danger every minute
and loving it.